If you were in the market for a length of steel chain or a hatchet or a decorative wrought iron fence, you just need to go to the hardware store. But there was a time when crafted metal pieces could only be ordered at a dimly lit, blazing hot workroom known as the blacksmith's shop. A few real blacksmiths still exist in Maine. In our next installment of Once Upon a Job, Jennifer Mitchell takes us to Saco to meet a man who made the very hammer that he uses.
I'm Joel Tripp. I'm a blacksmith. I've been blacksmithing since 1991.
And Joel Tripp looks the part, too. Tall, bearded, and built like a man accustomed to wielding a 5-pound hammer, Tripp has always preferred to work with his hands.
I grew up here on this farm, and we were always using old equipment. All the tools were old. A lot of it was my grandfather's tools.
Tripp says his fascination with tools started then. He took to replacing the worn-out wooden handles on axes, shovels, and hammers, and from there developed an interest in creating the rest of the tool. But finding someone who could teach him the craft of smithing proved to be impossible. Instead, he enrolled at the University of Maine to pursue a career in forestry.
And several years later, when I was working for a local paper company, I was sent out to meet with a landowner in Brownfield. And after looking at his woodlot, we ended up back at his workshop, and it turns out that he was a blacksmith, and that's how I met the master that I trained with.
In a year, Tripp had set up his first smithy. He's been balancing forestry and blacksmithing ever since.
We'll do something simple, just so you get the idea of the processes.
Blacksmiths throughout history have been regarded as both important and a little frightening. Celtic fairy lore has it that the seventh in a family line of blacksmiths is imbued with special powers, and that the water from any blacksmith's trough has magical properties. Blacksmith gods are mentioned in the ancient religions of India, as well as Japan and ancient Greek and Celtic mythology. There's also a blacksmith in the Old Testament, a descendant of the fratricidal Cain. Tripp says it's true that blacksmiths throughout the ages have commanded a certain spooky awe.
You can make something really hard and brittle, or you can make it soft. And that magic, only by using fire and water, imparted secret powers to the blacksmith. He was known as a conjurer of sorts.
But it's really just science and know-how, says Tripp. Blacksmithing is essentially the craft of manipulating steel by heating, striking, and cooling metal.
Well, let's warm something up here. What do we get?
Tripp goes to the forge where a pile of bituminous coal is already blazing away on top. A 100-year-old hand-cranked blower has been retrofitted with an electric motor, although Tripp often cranks it old school. The blower forces air up under the forge to keep the coal blazing hot. At one time, the forge would have used a bellows apparatus. Then, Tripp puts a rod of steel into the molten pile of coal and waits for it to begin to glow. When the metal just starts to turn red, it's about 800 degrees. The workshop is dim inside. Blacksmiths traditionally work that way, says Tripp.
The reason we keep the shops dark is so that we can see the color of the steel. Because the steel comes out of the fire hot, it's luminescent, and if there's low ambient light, we can see the color of the steel better.
And color matters. Different types of work require different temperature colors, and there's a safety aspect, too. A piece of steel that looks gray and cool in bright light may in fact be 700 degrees and emitting a low-level glow that can only be seen in a darker setting. Tripp will let this piece of metal reach white-hot temperatures of 2,600 degrees before he works it. There are 7 basic things that a blacksmith can do to steel.
The first one is the easiest. We can draw out, which means anytime we reduce the dimension of the steel. We can upset it, which is anytime we increase the dimension of the steel. That's actually the hardest thing we do.
Then there's bending, twisting, cutting, punching, and welding.
If you can do those 7 things with some proficiency, you can make anything.
Tripp takes the glowing rod to the anvil, where he begins to shape it with his hammer. When it begins to cool off, he sticks it back into the fire and works it again until what started out as a straight steel stick has suddenly become a dainty little leaf. Then into the cooling trough it goes. At one time, there would have been at least one blacksmith in every village. Now's this trip, there are about 6 or 8 in the entire state, and all of them have a second job. Some things haven't changed, though. The techniques are pretty much the same as they were centuries ago. Tripp is still called upon to create practical gear for farms that use oxen and draft horses. Custom-made tools like hatchets and axes are also still popular. While blacksmithing in the past was largely functional, many modern blacksmiths now focus on purely artistic items. Others embrace both.
And that's where I find myself. Almost everything I make is, it may be decorative, but it's functional.
His current project? A custom set of barbecue tongs with little hands on the ends. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.